This is Parsha. It's appropriate. Vayakel Moshe. The concept of the Kehila, of Moshe Rabbeinu leading a Kehila, gathering the people, assembling the Am, and giving over his messages, the halachos of Kadosh Baruch Hu, bringing down the Torah Shebichtav and the Torah Shebaal Peh, and passing it down to Bnei Yisrael. As many of you know, this is exactly the role of a Rav. And today, Baruch Hashem, we have a schus to have one of the premier, one of the well-known Rabbanim in America, leading a wonderful Kehila in Teaneck, as everybody knows, and the relationship between Shalavim and Rabbi Pruzansky as a prat, the Pruzansky family as a klal, the Shul B'nai Shur as a Kehila, is a strong, strong connection as we see also the Talmidim are here, and it's a tremendous chus for us to have some Torah. We're going to be zochah for a few shiurim, Merz Hashem, hopefully before Pesach, maybe a little after Pesach. So on this Tkufat Shabbaton, we are the recipients of the chus of having some Torah from Rabbi Pruzansky. Thank you very much.
Sharim Amukim v'chamim in Mishivat Shalvim. Enough of the Hebrew. Okay, so this was a series that I did a few years ago. It was on Shabbos. And it involves being a good Jew. What really are the qualities that define a good Jew as the Torah understands it? And I think back then I did 8. And I want to take up one today, maybe a few others over the next couple of months. And this is the basic principle of Dracheha Darchei Noam, that the ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness. So what exactly does that mean? It sounds very nice, sounds platitudinous, but what exactly does it mean? What's the definition of Darchei Noam? Who is going to define it? Of course, the pasuk where it comes from is familiar to all of us. It's number one, it's in the third parak of Mishle. We say it every time we return the Torah to the Aron HaKodesh. The ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness, and all its pathways are peace. So Malbim says in number 2 that Haderech or Haderech Hagadol Hakavul Arabim. Haderech is a highway; it's a wide road. Vanasivos Heim Shalchim Bam Yechidim. But a path is a path on which an individual travels. A path is much narrower. So in fact, a derech will include all different types of wisdom, many different areas of well, all of which lead a person to the darchei noam, to the ways of pleasantness. But an ativ is much smaller, it's much narrower. In fact, the Gra says here that v'chol nasiv oseh shalom, that in fact, to get to peace is much more limited. You need greater precision. But to find ways of pleasantness, that has much more leeway. So here, in fact, the Malbim continues, Darchei HaChochma Kolim Heim HaDrachim Movilim El HaNoam. All the ways of the sages, of the wise one, include all the ways that bring us to this Noam, pleasantness. It's the pleasantness, a satisfaction of the soul that comes to a person when he achieves his purpose, when he finds the goal. In fact, satiates the soul. It's cleansed. We're naturally drawn, or should naturally be drawn, to these ways of pleasantness. We'll see that the Torah and Chazal use this phrase of Darchei Darchei Noam in order to understand a wide variety of mitzvahs. But as a general overview, look at the Ralbag on the same pasuk in number 3. And he says something that's very powerful that we should reflect on, that if we don't feel, we should ask ourselves why we don't feel it, and then internalize a greater understanding of Torah. So Rabbag says, Hine darchei haTorah im drachim she'yin'amu v'yimtiku me'ol le'adam. The ways of the Torah are ways that cause pleasantness and sweetness to a person. That God does not impose on us anything that should feel like a burden, anything that's overwhelming, that's just too hard for us. Anything that God commands us to do or not to do, so they are pleasant. They're inherently desirable. Lo kini musei agoyim shayu ma'amisim v'hem dvarim kashim. Gamez b'neim ez b'nasem yisrku ba'esh l'Eloheihem. Not like the customs of the non-Jews that burden their adherents, their faithful, with very difficult things. He mentions Molech. They would even offer their children, sacrifice them, burn them in the fire. So you see, in fact, what he's saying is that, and he was more familiar with Christianity, that the ways of the non-Jews, many religions impose hardship on people. In fact, they find spirituality in suffering, in deprivation, in asceticism, all right? If you take Christianity, for example, you take the spiritual leaders of Christianity, so a priest does not marry. He's removed from that whole institution. Monks deprive themselves of many things, food, drink, sometimes even speech. There's a monastery, Latrun, not far from here, where the monks have a vow of silence. They don't speak. If you yell at them, they won't answer you, because they can't. They can't speak. Once they leave, they allow themselves certain flexibility. But inside, they don't speak, so they don't interact, except more than a few words a day. That's what we call an omes. That's a hardship. That's a burden on a person, not to be able to enjoy life. If you think spiritual growth is to be found in a non-enjoyment of life, it's completely wrong. Drecha darchei noam. The ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness, and its pathways lead to peace. The Torah brings us to noam, and it brings us to shalom. It provides us with enjoyment to the guf, and enjoyment to the neshama as well. That's an overview. That's how the Rabbah saw mitzvahs. That's how we're supposed to see mitzvahs as well. Something that just leads us to enjoyment. Not that we do it because we enjoy it. We do it because they're mitzvahs. They're commanded to us. But nonetheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to do things that for us are innately pleasurable. Not only that, but we'll see in a number of cases that Chazal understood mitzvahs the same way. There can't be a mitzvah that properly understood contains within it things that are unpleasant. Take the first case in number 4. It's the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara is talking about the Dalad Minim we take on Sukkos. Ukachtem lachem bayom rishon pri etzadar, kapos torim, v'anaf etzavos v'arvei nochas. We have 4 Minim. So you ask a question. How do you know what the Minim are? Does the Torah describe what the pri etzadar is? We know it's an esrog. Ask another question. How do we know what the esrog is? How do we know what a lulav is? So we know by Mesar, it's Halacha Moshe Sinai, but nonetheless, the Gemara asks as follows, states as follows, Tanya, Rav Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Tarfon, Kapos Tamarim, the lulav must be a branch of a tree that's kofos, it's bound together. I mean, the leaves can't be apart. You know, if you see a palm tree in Florida, then the leaves are already open. We get it at the earliest stage. Kofos, im hayuparud yich. If it's spread apart the leaves, then it has to be tied together, held together. So how do we know that kapos tmorim means a lulav? A macharuta. Maybe we'll say it's a charuta. Charuta is a palm, but it's a very hard branch. So the Gemara says it can't be ba'ino kofos v'leko. It has to be something bound, and it's not. There the leaves already spread. Ve'ema ufto. Maybe it'll be like a log that's all together. Everything is held together. The Gemara says, no. Kofos michlal de'ika parud. V'hai kofos va'ome le'olam. There, it's already rock hard. It's like overripe. And it can't separate. And kapos tamara means it has to be capable of separating. So the Gemara says, va'ema kufro, maybe it'll be a palm shoot. A different species, but nonetheless related to the palm. Amar Abaye can't be. It can't be a kufra because the kufra has thorns. Can't have a lulav with thorns. Inherently, can't have it with thorns because if you hold it, you'll scratch yourself. That's not darchei noam. So too, the next amud, lamed beis in sukkah, asking about the arava, anaf eitz avos, she'anafov chofinis eitzel. The hadas is anaf eitz avos. Arvenoch az aravos. So anaf eitz avos, how do we know that's the hadas, the myrtle? So the Gemara says the words themselves imply she'anafov chofinis eitzel, that the leaves surround, cover, chupa, cover the wood, the stem. Ve'izehu ve'omer zehadas. Fine. You see on the hadas and the myrtle, the leaves go all the way around. Maybe it's the eight zayit, the olive branch, same thing. But inon avos veleka, avos means it's plated, like chain. Each one is interconnected. Ve'ema dulva, Gemara says maybe it's a dulva. A dulva is like a chestnut. But inon anafav chofinus eitzo veleka, no, because there the leaves don't go around the stem. Ve'ema hirduf, maybe it's a hirduf. So a hirduf is analogous to the kufra in the last case. I hear there was a stem, the leaves were all the way around, they were plated, but the stem, the corner of the leaf was so sharp, it could cut you. Abaye said again, darchei noam v'leko. The Torah represents always pleasantness, and to have something, a mitzvah, in which you would have to maybe cut yourself, so that can't possibly be. You see, in terms of defining a chefetz shel mitzvah, what Chazal did is they took Dorcha Darchei Noam and used it as a factor, as a corollary, as an element in determining what the chefetz would be. And if it does not qualify as Darchei Noam, then it has to be rejected. Look at another case. You'll see, we'll have a number of cases. See how expansive this whole concept is. Look at number 8 to the top left, the Gemara in Yevamos. At the end of the 8th parak. So the Gemara there says, an interesting case, a little complicated case. Omer le Rav Yehuda midiskarta l'Rava. Rav Yehuda said to Rava, lo nasa mesim kechayim le'inyan yibum mikal v'chomer. We should not make the dead like the living regarding yibum from a kal v'chomer. So the instant case the Gemara is talking about is, let's say, had a Bas Kohen, a Kohen's daughter, who's married to a Yisrael. So they have a child. So Bas Kohen is married to a Yisrael. Can she eat Truma? No, because she's married to a Yisrael. If he dies, all right, and they have no children, can she then go back to eating Truma? The Torah says yes. V'shavo v'esavia kinorel. V'lemo lechem avia tochel. She can. What if she has a child? She has a child and the husband dies, she cannot eat truma because the child is a Yisrael, and the fear is if there's truma around the house, he may eat it. So it has to be, as the Torah says, bezera ein lo, she has no child at all. What if the child dies though? Then that's mesim echaim. Once the child dies, then even though the Torah says bezera ein lo, now she has no zera, so therefore it should be the same thing. That's the kal v'chomer. What of this case? Take the next case. So this Bas Kohen marries a czar. He dies. They had a child before. Then she marries someone else. He dies also. All right? Can she eat truma because she has no vlad from the second husband? No, she still has a living child from the first husband. But if that child dies, then we say she's still psulim in a truma. I'm sorry, if the child is alive, she's psulim in a truma. But if the child dies, then she's not. Lo asa mesim kechayim, makom shlo asa vlad min arishon kevlad min asheni, lepotra min ayibum. Eino din shel nasa mason kechayim. Is this case. Husband dies, leaves a child, and then the wife remarries. So, husband dies, leaves a child, there's no din of yibum chalitza because she had a child. Let's say she marries again, and then he dies without a child. Does she need yibum from the second husband's family? Answer is, yes, even though she has a child, it's from the first husband. The second didn't have a child, so she needs it. So take the next case now. Let's say the husband dies, they leave a child, there's no yibum. But now the child dies also, subsequently. Does the wife now require yibum from the husband's brothers or brother? So that's the kavachom that Rav Yehuda ben Diskareta made. That we made a mesim into chayim, so too here we'll make the mesim into chayim. While he's alive, then he's alive. But once he's dead, he's not alive anymore. Therefore she should require yibum. The Gemara answers, Talmud Lomar, no. Dracha darchei noam v'chol nasivo seh shalom. The Torah is the ways of pleasantness. Look at Rashi number 9. V'zo shehoye lo ben v'lo nizkako liyavom v'niseis l'shuk. This one had a child, so she did not require yibum. And then she married someone else, and then her child died. Im tomar tachalos. If you'd say she needs chalitza now because of the second husband, or because the first husband died, harehi misgan al bailo, her second husband will be turned off to her. Hilkach al karchacha ben ein lo b'shas misa kamar v'aregeshlo. The Torah says in the parasha of Yibum, ben ein lo, can't be a child, it means there can't be a child at the time of death. If that child dies later, the wife, once exempt from Yibum, continues to be exempt from yibum. Why? How do we resolve that? It's just not nice. It's not pleasant. Here she was married. That marriage ended. There's no zikuk liyibum because she had a child. If the child dies, God forbid, she's remarried. You can't say now something's reawakened. It's just not pleasant. It's not tolerable. Take another case, a famous case, the Mesha Chochma in number 11. The Torah says, as we know, pruer vu umilu asoras. There's an obligation to procreate. Gemara in Yevamos discusses the obligation, beisil beishamai, where it's that one boy, one girl, or two boys, like beishamai says. In any event, who's the chiyuva? The man or the woman? What do you say? Should be both, right? Because men and women are both indispensable to procreation, or so I've learned. It's getting less so, by the way, but that's a different issue. And yet the halacha is that only the man is obligated to pruvu, not the woman. How could that be? The Meshech Chochma says, Lo rochoku lemor toshe patra ha-Torah noshe mipiria v'rivyo v'chiv harak anashim. He said, it wouldn't be far-fetched to say that the reason why the Torah exempted women from pruvu and only obligated men is because drachat darchei noah. Because the ways of the Torah, ways of peace. And it didn't impose on a Jew what the body can't handle. In anything that's prohibited, the Gemara does not prohibit everything, but we have a similar pleasure, you see, in Chul. The Gemara says anything prohibited to us in some form, it's permissible to us as well. So from the Torah you see, you only have an obligation to fast one day a year. And before that fast, the Torah obligates us to eat. Meaning it's not just an obligation to fast on Yom Kippurim, it's an obligation to eat on Yom, on Erev Yom Kippurim. It starts at night, but by day there's a chiyuv to eat. So too, relations with one's wife is prohibited only to Moshe Rabbeinu, to no one else. Because God needed him constantly because of his greatness, his level. He couldn't have a normal married life. In the heat of battle, the Torah permits the Jewish soldier the Yafas Tohar. Lo Dibra Torah Kadeged Yetzirah. You can't tell someone to go out and kill and be aggressive and be belligerent and say, in this area he can't be a conqueror. So the Torah allows the Yetzirah some opening here in Milchama, but it's controlled. It's controlled, so it can't be just unrestrained. Umatsono echoyazos levin pino lavosa kabbalah. We see as well that this was a foundation, cornerstone, for the fathers of the Kabbalah, should mean the Chazal. Shepotru meyibu mishemesu bala v'charkach mishum d'rachadach enom. Yeah, Chazal understood it as well. Vimkein. So why then should a woman be exempt from puravu if she is quite indispensable? Because noshem mishemesukos be'ibur v'leidah. Because women endanger themselves in childbirth. Umishum zelmer misa shchicha. Because there's an element of danger involved, the Torah could not obligate the woman to have a child, to procreate. What does the Torah do then? It's very interesting. So God implanted in women a maternal instinct, meaning they want to have children. So the man sometimes doesn't want, sometimes yes, but the woman, she has this balance. She has no obligation. So if a woman would not want to have children, the Torah doesn't obligate her to have children. On the other hand, most women, almost all, but most, have a very powerful maternal instinct. They want to have children. It's the maternal instinct that enables them to overcome the danger involved and the pain and the travails involved. And you see, in fact, it's true in life as well. A woman have a child, and pregnancy is difficult, and childbirth is difficult, labor, so they tell me. And Chazal even say a woman will take an oath not to have children anymore, not to go through this pain and this suffering. And yet, a few months pass, she gets her strength back, the maternal instinct kicks in again, and she wants to have more children as well. And he says, by the way, that's why the Torah says pru urvu to Adam and Chava, and by extension to Noah, but in Parshas Vayishlach, when God commands Yaakov, and Ikel Shakai, pray urve, pru urvu is plural. Pray urve is singular. It means the nature of the mitzvah shifted to the man, not to the woman. Why? Only because of Drachel, Darchei Noah. Look at the next one, number 12, a little piece from Chaim Ozer. In Shut Achiezer, Chelak Aleph, Evan Ezer Simon Yud. So the case here, a very sad case, a woman, Valdas Nishtate Saklua Shiva Shonim Bevesacholim Shom, Arofim Om Mashain Trufa Lamachaloso. A woman who is already 7 years in institution, she's mentally ill, cannot care for herself or others. The doctors say there's no medicine, no pill that will be able to cure her. And the husband is now all alone, he's bereft, the children are gone. So the question is about the propriety of the Heta Meir Rabbanim to have 100 rabbis from 3 different provinces sign, or countries sign a Heta permitting him to take a wife in addition to this particular wife. So Chaim Ozer said, yes, it has to be because of Drachel Darchei Noam. It's not pleasant, it's not fair to impose that on the husband, especially when the Torah permits it. Even Rabbeinu Gershom, when he prohibited polygamy, so he allowed this leniency of the Heter Meir Rabbanim, the theory being it will be used sparingly and with integrity, and it's difficult to get 100 rabbis to agree on anything, much less 100 rabbis from 3 different countries. I see, you ask me a good question. If that's the case, so what about the general laws of get? The chosav lo sefer krisus v'nasan biyado. Where's the drachad arche noam there? Because a man has the option of a heta meir rabbanim, but a woman does not. So what do you say? Oh, now you're silent all of a sudden. So I think the answer is the idea of drachad arche noam defines the particulars of a mitzvah. Meaning, if we don't understand, if we're mesupik as to a detail in the mitzvah, then drachet darchei noam be the determinant. But we don't say that in sitting in judgment of a mitzvah, that every mitzvah necessarily is going to be darchei noam. Most of them are. Obviously, killing a Amalek is not darchei noam. It may be beneficial to society, but it's a tough sell to a Amalek. But nonetheless, in the details of the mitzvah, Derched Darcheinom defines the system. Within the system, occasionally a mitzvah will not necessarily be Darcheinom. It'll cause undue suffering to someone, almost be'onis. But nonetheless, the mitzvah we accept. It's when we're in doubt as to a particular detail of the mitzvah. So there we'll say Derched Darcheinom becomes the determinant. Turn the page, look at number 13. A very interesting case. Yachel Yisrael is the book of the Shailos and Tshuvos of Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, Shlita, the former chief rabbi, currently chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. So here's the case. A case the Radvaz had, the Radvaz commenting on the Rav Menachem Rekanati. A certain jurisdiction, the king, a wicked non-Jew, grabs two Jews and says to one of them, if you let me, say, chop off your hand, then I won't kill your friend. But if you don't let me chop off your hand or take out your eye, then I will kill your friend. And the question that came to the Radvaz was, is the first person obligated to forfeit his hand in order to save his friend's life? Now, it turns out that the Rav Menachem Rekanati was one of the Rishonim, 13th century. Rekanati is a port town in eastern Italy, still exists today. So he said, the Rekanati said a few centuries earlier, when the case first came up, or Vaz in 16th century, Egypt, in Yerushalayim, Chayav l'haniach l'katzei tzaeter. Said, you have to allow your hand to be cut off to save the life of your friends, b'koch nefesh. All right? That the Radvaz did not accept. And he said, it's a midas chasidus to do, it's an act of piety, but the Torah cannot command such a thing. And now look in the text, Umasik Radvaz Visu Dichsiv Drecha Darche Noam. The Torah is the way of pleasantness. Vitzorch Shemishpate Torah So Yu Maskim Osecha Vasvara. The laws of the Torah always have to accord with a person's intelligence, with his reason, with his ability to think logically. So how could a person even entertain the idea that he should have his eye put out or his arm or leg amputated so he shouldn't have his friend killed? Those are the words of the Radvaz. You can't, it's not tolerable because the Torah is Darche Noah. And Rav Lau agreed with that as well, with the Radvaz. And he then goes in the next paragraph, very interesting discussion of the Gemara we just discussed in Yevamos. That Misha Meis Bail Chakach Meis Binom. She'ein Yafels Atul Yibum, because of it's not Darche Noam. And he quotes his father-in-law, Olav Hashom's, Rav Lau's father-in-law, Rav Yitzchak Yedidya Frankel, was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv also into the 1970s, maybe 1980s as well, whereas Rav Lau is now the chief rabbi. So he says that this notion of Derecha Darchei Noam is not that we say that she will not require Yibum because of Derecha Darchei Noam, Ela Tamzehu Begeder Hochachosh HaKavanas HaTorah Be'amro Uvein Einlo He Shechayeves Yibum. It means that we're trying to understand the Torah. We cannot explain a mitzvah in the Torah if the outcome will be a violation of that principle of Derecha Darchei Noam. It can't be any other way. So here the Gemara is asking, Kavachomer, should we require Yibum, not Yibum? It's not that we say, nah, let's be nice, Derecha Darchei Noam won't require it. Rather, you have to understand the Torah. If the Torah says, Uven Ein Lo, that the couple did not have children, therefore she should require Yibum, that can only be interpreted in a way that will accord with Derecha Darchei Noam. That's the pshat. Look at the fourth line from the bottom. Valderach so yesh lefarsh is kavanasar advaz kan. That's what I understand the Radvaz here as well. She'en ritzono loma shebiglal Darchei Noam hu potur milahatzil. It's not that we'll say that because of Darchei Noam, the guy doesn't have to save his friend. You can't say that it's Darchei Noam not to save your friend when Rav Menachem from a Kavachomer deduced that you should have to. Rather, Haradvaz Savar Shesvaras Darchei Noam, he hochacha shekol asvar shevenu lidchos es psakar rekanati heinachonos. It's rather that all the arguments that we had to refute the rekanati, it has to be, they have to be valid because of Dracha Darchenom. Mnei shalom istabash et etzava tor mitzvah skaelu. It cannot be the Torah would command such a thing. Umemelo vehechrech shina kal vachomer nocho mikol atayim shahu v'bidvarov. The kal vachomer cannot stand up before that. The only way to understand the Torah properly is with the corollary of Dracha Darchenom having a prominent role. Okay. How much time we have? What time we finish? Seven? I'm sorry? 15. Oh, 20 minutes. Okay, good. So let's look at number 14. The Shut from Mishpatei Uziel, or Meir Ben Zion Chai Uziel, was a Sephardic chief rabbi around the time that I was born. So he has a question here that relates to an interesting topic about Eidus. About one of the things I want to show you is that this principle of Rechad Darchenom applies across the Torah in so many different realms. So he's discussing in the laws of Kabbalah's Eidus, taking testimony, the two basic shitas, whether Eidim can testify b'chsav, in writing. Can they submit their testimony, like write it out and just hand it to the court? Or do they have to testify orally? So Rashi says in his Perush on Torah, Al pish shnayim Eidim, the Torah requires two witnesses. V'lo sheyichlu edusom b'geres v'shachlu beisdin, and they can't write up their testimony and send it to the court. V'lo sheyamu meturgam b'bein eidim v'dayanim, nor can they stand up an interpreter between them and the dayanim. Rather, they have to testify directly. Now, one of the things he's talking about, the question actually was, can an aide testify over the telephone, over the radio, over closed circuit, over, they call it today, Skype, or FaceTime, even more modern. Can a witness sit here and testify through those electronic mechanisms in a base thing? That's the question he's dealing with. And he, as a subsidiary matter, he dealt with as well the question of Eidus B'Chsav. So Rashi says it has to be live oral testimony. Live and oral. Shitas Rabbeinu Tam, Shemiyuta Kosov Mipiyam Velomi Piksovam, the Torah excluded from that requiring oral testimony and not written, Hu Rak Be'ilem She'eino Ben Agada B'Fiv. That's just to exclude someone who's a mute, who can't speak. Or from a person who can speak, but he doesn't remember his testimony except from writing. So this, you know, is an issue always in the court. It was an issue when I was a lawyer as well. When you testify, are you allowed to consult notes as to the incidents? Let's assume the case came up, the incident happened a year before, 2 years before. So the facts do become hazy over time, and very often people lead themselves into contradictions by not fully remembering where, when, where, what, etc. That's part of the drishos v'chakiras in the Torah system, but exists in the secular world as well. So if in fact a witness carries with him a sheet of paper, so one of the issues that are raised in the secular system is he's not allowed to testify from it. He can use it to refresh his recollection, but he can't read a statement. Because then it's canned, and you don't know whether, in fact, it's his testimony or not. And yet, the Rabbeinu Tam says here that Misha Zohar Edus of Humadaber, the person is healthy and remembers what happened, remembers his testimony, and he can speak. Yochal Eshloach Edus of Ichsav LeBeistin Sheksavohu Kedibur Piv. He can send a written statement. It's the same thing. Meaning, the court has the option. Rabbeinu Tam says they accept the statement. And if they deem it insufficient, so call me to testify. Now this has a number of ramifications. And he quotes here the Chassam Sofer, with whom he'll disagree. The Chassam Sofer says that Mikra Din Torah, Eilus Bishtar, is good. Afilu Ameisu Eidim Achasum V'dinei Momenus. Hoel Vashtar Nichta Meratzim Adasim Eschayim. You have a document, Adam sign, Adam die, then it's still satisfactory according to the law of the Torah. That becomes an Edus Bichsav. What's an Edus Bichsav? You have a contract to buy a house. You have a get. And all the Edom who signed, they're no longer around. So because they're no longer around, therefore the Shtar is now invalid. That can't be. So Rabbeinu Tam distinguishes between different cases of Mominus and the Fashas. And then he says that Chazal also imposed different strictures. So for example, Mikra Din Torah, Edus Bichsav is good, but Bimei Asofrim Sharabu Zayfanim Mikasvei Amol Tikula Hashakim Shtaros. When at a certain period of time counterfeiters arose, people would forge documents, then Chazal were misaken that Edom should either testify in person or they needed to sign a separate document that Makayim their Edus, meaning someone says these signatures are valid, I recognize them. And Rabbeinu Tam says, then they changed again. People became more honest. They got rid of that, and they reverted to the change. All right, and then he says as follows that's the way it stood. Ad kan tokev dvarav, that if there's kiyum mashtar after the Edom die, then before the Edom die rather, then that shtar will be able to be legitimated. Now, Rav Meir Ben Sion Chaim Uziel argued some sofer, and he didn't like any of these things. In fact, interestingly enough, he prohibited Edus over the telephone, over closed circuit, over Skype, over FaceTime, and Edus Bechsav as well. Disagreed with some sofer. It's interesting because Rav Uziel is usually known as a very liberal interpreter of halacha. Here, in fact, he's very stringent. I can tell you that almost routinely Batei Din will hear someone's testimony over the telephone. I've done it myself, the base of America, or over a Skype. In fact, you now even have a situation where it's not uncommon, it's a debatable area though, but it's not uncommon that in a case of a get, they'll even have a get be authorized via Skype or closed circuit, in order to prevent a situation of aguna. Anyway, he said that the Chassam Sofer's argument why Edus Bichsav should be good is that you can't have a situation whereby a woman is divorced, she has a get, the Edom sign of the get, and Misha Mesu Edom Liya La Shum Ra'al Gerusha, when the Edom dies, there's no longer any proof that she was divorced, because they're just the signatures there, but they could have been forged. That can't be. Why? Because of Drachat Darchei Noam. That was the argument of the Chassam Sofer. In fact, that argument carries the day today, notwithstanding that Rav Uziel disagreed. Because he says you can have Kiyam Shtar right after they sign, so you avert the problem of after death. But nonetheless, you see, anything that's going to give rise to a situation where Darchei Noam will be breached, that cannot be tolerated. Let's look at two or three more cases. Number 15. The Shut of the Oneg Yom Tov. Oneg Yom Tov was referral Halperin, the Bialystok Rav in the 19th century. So he was dealing with this case. All right, also very interesting case. There's a Kohen who was married to a woman for 18 years, and then she too went nuts. And he sent her away to her father's house to live. He couldn't have her in the house anymore. And he gave her a piece of paper and said to her, this is a get. All right? And she didn't really understand, but she took the paper, went to her father's house. Father opens it up, and it's completely blank. Blank. He just wanted to give her some reason why she had to go to her father's house to stay. She returns from her father's house a few months later, returns to live with her husband. And again, he decides to send her away, but this time he writes a get on it. And he tells her again in front of Edom that this is your get, take your get to your father. One of the Edom apparently was a valid aid, the other was some young kid, described as a fool, who watched. And other people in the neighborhood also heard him yell after the carriage, taking her away, "This is your get, this is your get." Goes to her father's house. In fact, the husband wrote the text of a get, but without any signatures on it, no eidim. And additionally, a few weeks later, he regretted having done that, and now wants his wife back, despite the mental condition, with the obstacle being, it's Cohen. It's Cohen can't marry a divorcee, even his own wife. So what do you say? The question became, was the get valid or not, the get that he had written? I mean, Ikra Din, if a man writes out a get, and Adam see it, then it suffices. You don't need to sign because it's his own handwriting. You only need Adam when someone else is writing the get. He quotes in number 15 the Tshuva of the Marami Lublin, who has a related case, Shchiv Mera. So Shchiv Mera is a person who is near death. See, how very often in halacha this case arises, I hope not that much in real life, you have a Shchiv Mera, a person near death, who wants to divorce his beloved wife only so that she should not have to go through Yibum or Chalitza. Mainly Chalitza. Let's say a brother lived in a very distant, inaccessible land. He gives her a get, and he says to her, Shemiyomos lo tiskak li Yibum. If he dies, she won't need Yibum because she'll be a divorcee. V'misrape mecholyo yachsu v'yisena. But if he recovers, then he'll marry her again. So the question is such a get a valid get? Is that a reasonable approach to getting? So he says, the Marami Lublin, quotes the Lubush as well, said no. That in fact, you can't have such a situation as a divorce where the husband retains ties to the wife. In other words, if the husband would say to the wife, you're divorced, but iat muteres l'chol adam, you're not free to marry other people. In fact, even if he says you can't marry this one person, the get is not a get. A get has to be complete separation. Divorce, complete separation from the man to the wife. Was there here a complete separation between the man and the wife? So you say, not necessarily, because in the ideal circumstance, he wouldn't have divorced her. He would have divorced her because of her mental condition. In any event, the Oneg Yom Tov concludes here too. They said, by the way, the case of Yibum was not the case of the get of the Shchiv Mera is not valid. Halacha might be different, but that's a different issue. The get of the Shchiv Mera is not valid because it's not a complete separation. But nonetheless, here we'll say there's no get for a variety of reasons. It wasn't the form of the get. No witnesses to the get. The witnesses who saw were unclear. There was disputed testimony as to whether it was his handwriting or not, but the bottom line is he didn't intend that she should be muteras to everyone, and therefore she is free to return to him. Okay, two more cases. The Ginas Viradin. Very interesting case. I think it'll surprise you. From Avram Alevi, who was the chief rabbi of Cairo in the 17th century. I'll have to read it inside. Oh, let's read it inside. Ruvain Hisker Beser L'Shimon B'sach Shishim Midas B'chol Chodesh. Ruvain rents his house to Shimon for 60 Midas a month. After a few years, Ruvain tells Shimon he should vacate because Levi wants to pay him 70 Midas a month. Business? L'chein tan Ruvain L'Shimon Shem Yirtze L'adur B'vayis Sheyalo Lov Sechiras Avayis. But Reuven does give Shimon the chance to stay, just tells him the rent's going up to 70 mitas a month, not 60. Shimon says no, he doesn't want to pay anymore, but rather he says that Reuven should wait a certain time till he could find another house, and in the interim he'll pay Reuven the 60 mitas a month that he was paying him all along. And Reuven says no. You have no date certain to leave. If you want to stay, you have to pay 70 a month, not 60 a month. What do you say? Should he pay 60 or 70? Should he leave right away? So the Ginas Varodim writes a number of reasons why Shimon should have to leave or pay the higher amount. Then he concludes as follows. Ubarmi kodein roni l'zikos es ruvein mishum The ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness. So you think ways of pleasantness will favor the tenant, not the landlord or owner, correct? Incorrect. It's only proper, it's only fair that the balabayas, the owner, should be able to rejoice and enjoy the bounty that God has favored him with. So he owns the house. He can't let the tenant tell him how to run his business or how much money he should pay. He can't have a situation where a person owns a house, owns a building, built a business for that matter, and a stranger will tell him, a stranger who did not toil in that, did not build that business. You can't have a situation where the stranger tells him what to do with his own property. That's not Darchei Noam. Darchei Noam means a person owns something, it's his. If he wants to be Baal Chesed, it's his choice, but the law cannot sustain it. And finally, the Bach has another case, interesting case. So you know the din of Yerushas HaGer. Ger is a convert. A convert maker, a din, has no relatives. Let's say he's not married. So a non-Jew converts, becomes a Jew. He, let's say, gains substantial assets, then he dies. So who owns his property? What's halacha? Yerushas HaGer? Hefker, it's ownerless. Kol HaKodem, Zacha, whoever comes first takes it. So the Bach dealt with this case. In a house, a ger died, and people rushed in to not to tend to his funeral, but to take all his property. So much so, there was nothing left. There was not even any money to bury the ger. Because usually, if people leave a will, the first thing that's mentioned in a will is that you take care of, you direct the executor to take care of all your funeral expenses. Here the ger was left penniless because he died, people seized his property. The Bach could not tolerate that. And the Bach therefore says that a mace is kona lo nechasov toch dalar masov likvura. Very interesting concept. It's a chiddush, the Bach says. A mace is dead. The dead own nothing. If a person has relatives, at the moment of death, operation of law, everything is conveyed to his heirs. He dies without heirs, then it's hefker. The Bach says no. For the purpose of kavura, just like when we're alive, anything within our dalet amos is considered ours, so too, when a person dies, for the purposes of kavura, he's kone nechasim toch dalet amos as well. Whatever is within his dalet amos is his, and therefore the Bach says that property has to be sold in order to pay for the ger's funeral. All right? Vesu, last line, de'iko hocha in soye be'yeser se'e she'elu boru mevazvesen nechasov. How can it be? These vultures come, they descend on his house, they seize all his property, and then you'll make other people liable to pay for his burial? HaTorah Omra Dracha Darchei Noam V'chol Nesiv Oseh HaShalom. The Torah says, no, that can't be the way of Torah. The way of Torah is the way of peace. People want to seize his property, they should pay for it. What's interesting, by the way, in Reish Ayin Hey, in Choshev Mishpat, the Shulchan Aruch paskins the other way. Against the Bach, Ger Shemes Ubizbizu Yisrael Kol Nechasov, Ein Hazochim Bin Nechasov Chayovim B'Kviraso Yosef Yishal Kol Yisrael. Ger dies, his assets are squandered, those who plunder it are no more obligated to bury him, pay for the burial, than anyone else. Why? So Taz was the son-in-law of the Bach. The Taz quotes his father and says, but it's not mukhru what he says. It's because you can't impose. It's a tremendous chiddush, because the person dies, he doesn't own anything. You can't say I own something for kfur. That's ownership also. So hefker is immediate because of operation of law. Therefore, from a halacha perspective, it can't be. But from a moral perspective, the Bach is completely right. You see, in fact, that in this realm here, whether it's Vasisa Yashavato, which I decided not to discuss tonight, or Drachei Darchei Noam, the ways of the Torah, ways of peace, it affects our practice of mitzvos, in terms of the chefza, in terms of the maisa, in terms of the various elements of different mitzvos. Also, it's a yardstick, like the Rabbah said, against the way all mitzvos are to be measured. So we refer to the Torah as Darchei Noam, really as a determinant in terms of the mitzvos. The mitzvos have to be pleasant, both in our performance of them and the way we understand them as well. Because the whole purpose of the Torah is to create pleasant people. Through the mitzvos, we become pleasant, even more pleasant people than, of course, you, we would otherwise be. And therefore, the great barometer of life is what Chazal said in Avos, Kol Shiruch HaBrios Nocheimenu, Ruch HaMokom Nocheimenu. It's interesting that we let our reputations on high be determined by what happens here. If people like someone, if someone is likable, people doesn't only mean Jews, it means non-Jews also. Someone appreciates them, they have a good reputation, then you could know the Ruch HaMokom Nocheimenu as well. God also, kavyochol, accepts that reputation. And conversely, a bad reputation here, so you have a bad reputation on earth, it's not going to help that you learn or wear tefillin every day, because ein ruach hamakom nochemenu. All that comes from Drachei Darchei Noam as one of the fundamental elements of Torah. I thank you very much. I think we're back Sunday night and discuss another area. I think I'm going to do the notion of Emunas Chachamim. What does it mean to... it's one of the 48 ways that we're Konet Torah. What is Emunas Chachamim? And how does it help a Jew? What are, of course, its limitations? It's somewhat of a controversial area today, but we'll take that up Sunday night. I thank you all very much for coming. Hello.